Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. First case for oral argument this morning is Olson versus the Equitable Life Insurance Company. I got to do some roster announcing here. We're not quite ready yet. For the appellant will be Mark Meyer Henry, an attorney from Sioux Falls. And for the appellees, first will be arguing Mr. Timpson. Is that correct for 8 minutes, sir?
Correct.
And then Mr. Parsons will do 12 minutes. All right. We do have a few disqualifications this morning. And the court has appointed the Honorable Peter Lieberman, Circuit Judge from the Second Judicial Circuit, to sit on this case. The court has further appointed the Honorable Scott Myram, a judge from the Fifth Judicial Circuit, to sit on this case. And the court has appointed the Honorable Robert A. Miller, retired Chief Justice of this court, to also sit on this case. Mr. Meyer Henry, you may proceed, sir.
Chief Justice, may it please the court. Timpson, Mr. Parsons. Your Honors, this is the second time that this fact situation has come before the court. This court ruled on the underlying facts of this case back on November 17, 1979 in an appeal entitled Equitable Life versus First National Bank. This case arose on October 15, 1998 in Jones County, South Dakota. On that date, Equitable Life Insurance Company, who held a mortgage on the Olsons' property, had scheduled a foreclosure. The day before, on October 14th, to remind the court of the facts, Olsons had, through First National Bank, satisfied all their obligations to Equitable Life Insurance Company. And these negotiations, as the facts show, had gone on for some time. This wasn't a surprise. On October 14th, the money was wired to Equitable. Equitable at that point had no claim against the Olsons and had no right to have the foreclosure. As the facts showed in the prior appeal and are somewhat similar here today, there was confusion. The attorney for Equitable, in reminding the court, as it well knows, that a corporation can only act through an attorney in South Dakota in court, Equitable's attorney did not call off the sale in time, and it began. And the sheriff of Jones County, who was requested by Equitable to be the agent for the sale, it's not required by law, they could have appointed any responsible person to be their agent to conduct the sale, but Equitable chose the sheriff. And he began the sale. And there were phone calls back and forth, and it's Equitable's position that we think makes no difference, that they told the sheriff to stop the sale. Nevertheless, the sheriff conducted the sale. The sale was concluded. There were purchasers, and the sheriff gave the necessary certificates to the purchasers. What that did in practicality is, of course, the day before, Equitable got approximately $1.3 million, which was what they were owed. Of course, the Olsons had to borrow such sum from First National Bank. So the Olsons owed that money. By the wrongful sale going through for $1,810,000, interest began to accrue immediately if you wish to redeem the property, which ultimately they did. And that interest ran at 1% per month, or approximately $18,000. This court, in ending the first appeal, basically said, in words to this effect, to put people back in the positions they were before the wrongful foreclosure sale, because once the sale did take place, it got into court, and Circuit Judge Gores upheld the sale, resulting in the appeal I've referred to. So this lawsuit arose by the Olson, separate and apart from the appeal, but based on basically the same facts. This is an attempt to obtain monies paid to the people, Matthews and Miller, who bought the property. And in order to redeem it, it was required that the Olsons pay these interest costs and a number of other costs and other matters for this wrongful termination. That case is seized by the entry of two summary judgments. There was a summary judgment against the sheriff, or for the sheriff. There was a summary judgment on behalf of Equitable just a couple weeks before the scheduled trial was to take place. If the court permits, I want to talk about the Equitable summary judgment first, because the Equitable summary judgment is based on the fact that the sheriff is not their agent. And it is our general position, Olson's general position, is this. Equitable is a huge company. It's symbolic of people who lend money. It can only act through agents. The agents in this case are the attorney, not the present attorney, but the attorney at that time. And that attorney obtained from a circuit court an order appointing the sheriff. It's not required by law. Equitable chose the sheriff. The sheriff was their agent. This court found that. This court has said the sheriff is like an auctioneer. And it was clear in the first opinion that the sheriff is an agent, as is the attorney. So I'm going to refer to the attorney and the sheriff as the agents of Equitable. Now, why did the circuit court grant the summary judgment as to Equitable? Well, it's found on page 21 of the summary judgment transcript. The judge said, the question is it a superseding cause? The court finds it is. His actions, i.e. the sheriff's actions, were a superseding cause as determined in the restatement of torts and specifically in the Braun case, reference to a case of this court. So I want to start with what is a superseding cause? Because the circuit judge relied on section 452 of the restatement on superseding cause, actually exception to 452. And you have to build up to 452, and I would like to do that. Section 440 tells us, at least tells under the restatement's view, of what a superseding cause is. A superseding cause is an act of a third person or other force which by its intervention prevents the actor from being liable for harm to another when his antecedent negligence is a substantial factor in bringing it about. It's why I prefer to structure my argument first against Equitable, because the essence of this is a third person. The lower court found as to Mr. Timpson's client, the sheriff, in granting summary judgment, that he could not be liable by imputed negligence, in effect holding that he wasn't an agent, and then dismissed the case against the sheriff, frankly, based on governmental immunity in part and failure to give the notice. But it's important that the lower court, for some reason, found that the sheriff evidently was acting alone. Well, let's look at how the restatement treats agents of corporations. First of all, section 437 of the restatement says, if the actor's negligent conduct is a substantial factor in bringing about harm to another, the fact that after the risk has been created by his negligence, the actor has exercised reasonable care to prevent it from taking effect in harm does not prevent him from being liable for the harm. So here is Equitable. It has two agents. It has an attorney who does not stop the sale. It has another agent who starts the sale not having been told there is no sale. Now, Equitable says, well, our one agent told our other agent not to stop it. But they started it. They started it.
But can't you stop it at any time until the hammer drops?
Well, that's what eventually this court decided, and yes, you can. The problem is, it's all Equitable. There is no third person. The whole purpose of an intervening force is if an actor starts some type of harm and there's a distinguishable third party.
Well, wouldn't that be the state's attorney that the sheriff consulted with after Equitable asked him to shut the sale down?
It could be, but, Your Honor, the problem is, as this court said, we have to put people back in their place. So we have to look at the actors. I mean, here Equitable received the money. immediately, we presume, put it to interest. Yet it was their failure in not calling off the sale. Had they called off the sale, we wouldn't be here. Had they done what they should have done, there would be no harm. Now, once the sale started, and it's clear Equitable did not call off the sale, they told their agent, they published it 4 weeks in a row, they said this is the time and place. As a matter of fact, the evidence below will show the sheriff came back from his elk hunting trip in Colorado at the behest of the attorney to hold the sale. They were to be called and told whether to go forward with the sale. They didn't call. The sale went forward as it was published. This is all Equitable's agent. As this court found in the last case, the sheriff couldn't act it alone. The sheriff can't have a sale on his own. He is only the auctioneer for the creditor. The sale was not called off. Now it goes forward. There's two results. There's two results of a sale such as this. You either sell the property or you don't. The problem is the harm's begun, and we can all agree there was confusion. It took an appeal to this court to decide what the law was on the sale. Now, Equitable chose not to have an attorney present. It was all done by phone. They chose that. Frankly, I don't know why the taxpayers should be involved in this with having the state's attorney advise what is basically a private sale. Why do we subsidize Equitable? And now Equitable wants to put all the harm on the sheriff. Frankly, sheriffs are not trained in the intricacies of this. All of your honors have been involved with local government, with sheriffs, with state's attorneys. These folks are not experts on mortgage foreclosure and shouldn't be.
And yet we use the sheriffs. I mean, statutes allow us to use sheriffs to serve subpoenas, civil process, executions. I mean, they do a lot of these different things. I wonder about the implications of this. If we say the sheriff is an agent of all the persons who request them to do these various functions, are we going to be opening the door to many new lawsuits where a sheriff's negligence, say, in executing on a judgment or serving a subpoena, might be imputed back to the persons who've asked the sheriff to do this?
Well, I suppose it's a case-by-case basis, but no, I don't think we suddenly do that. Because here, the reason it's important of this agency relationship is Equitable in the lower court view is that there is an intervening force, that there is a new unrelated entity called the sheriff that comes in and shields them. Remember, the exception shields Equitable. It shields them. It doesn't say they weren't negligent. The Braun case is clear. It doesn't say there was perhaps negligence. It's the exception to the rule that says we're going to do this. And so in this particular case, the result is Equitable and any other creditor can be lax. They can let a sale go forward and then say, well, the sheriff was confused and did the wrong thing, and the superseding cause cut off all of their liability. The restatements that I have in my brief are that that's not the case, that it shouldn't be the case, that if you properly go through what is a superseding cause, it's clear that you can't start a forest fire and then say that the fireman you hired made some mistake, and therefore I'm shielded by superseding cause from being protected. And that's what is occurring here. I mean,
also, wasn't Equitable's expectation that the sale would be canceled on their instructions reasonable in the sense of what more would you suggest Equitable should have done to cancel the sale beyond the steps they took?
Well, remember who Equitable is. Equitable is their attorney and the sheriff. Equitable is not Equitable sitting in St. Louis who got the wire. Equitable is their attorney. That's my whole point. Equitable, through its attorney, i.e. Equitable, didn't cancel the sale. It could be that someone from Equitable's corporate staff didn't let the Rapid City attorney know in time. It could be that the equitable attorney didn't do what he should have done, but that's not of concern to Olson. Olsons are out $18,000 a month until this got straightened out. And it certainly isn't the Olson's fault. And it certainly isn't First National Bank's fault. And Equitable is their lawyer. I mean, what Equitable wants to do between their two agents of the sheriff and their attorney, that's none of our business. What we're here today is to say that if a creditor like Equitable, through mistakes of theirs, not the sheriff's, they can't pin this all on the sheriff. The sheriff was backed up by Judge Gores. And it was only until it rose up to this level that we got the law straight. And now it's clear, perhaps. But Equitable caused this to happen. The heir was not calling off the sale, not being diligent. This was no small thing. I mean, I don't think anybody in this room thinks $1.3 million is a small thing, or more importantly, foreclosing on someone's ranch, house, or anything else. Historically, this court has been very sensitive to taking away people's homes and houses and requiring the law be followed. Well, here, this is the unusual case. Equitable made the mistake, and Equitable is their lawyer, and Equitable is their agent of sale. This could be a real estate man. The sheriff confuses the issue, frankly. The sheriff confuses the issue because we bring in government, we bring in all of these things. But if you go look at the order in the settled record, Equitable made a motion, asked the sheriff. You know, it may well be, and that's the case for tomorrow, but sheriffs on big, complex foreclosures routinely are very want to get involved with it. Look at what's going on today. Probably a third of all the mortgage foreclosures in this state are now done by lawyers who live in Colorado and North Dakota. Our civil sheriffs, they don't have the old-time South Dakota lawyer standing there at the foreclosure giving advice. And I'm not here promoting liability on the sheriff. If you agree that Equitable, having chosen a sheriff who didn't have an advanced degree in mortgage foreclosure, as none of ours do, chose to put him in Jones County Courthouse all by himself without anybody else there from Equitable after they didn't call off the sale, there should be no blame on the state's attorney.
Well, I can remember when I was state's attorney up in Roberts County, the sheriff routinely asked for our advice on foreclosure matters, and based on a statute that I think that said that we were to give advice to county officials, we did it.
Don't quarrel with that, Mr. Chief Justice. My point being, Equitable, go look at any file where there's a foreclosure, and all of you, I believe, were circuit judges at one time. Did the sheriff's fee ever within 1/10 or 1/20 of the attorney's fee? Well, the attorney is also the corporation. Here, Equitable, for whatever reason, not our business, so to speak, chose not to send an attorney to a $1.3 million event. In fact, he didn't even make the phone call. That's where the liability lies. What happened during the sale is all Equitable. They want to paint the picture, and the lower court, frankly, accepted it, that somehow the sheriff's a third party. They placed the sheriff there by their choice. And we submit that the sheriff is simply, for the purposes of conducting the sale, an agent of Equitable and not a third party to have a superseding cause. And the responsibility, if this court agrees with the Olson contentions, goes right back to where it should be. The law permits creditors to use the system to collect debts. And it is driven by the requests of the plaintiff in the foreclosure. They serve the process, if there's a default, whatever. At some point, the law requires that you get an order to have a sale. And we normally call it, perhaps the statutes, I can't recall, it's a sheriff's sale, but it's a creditor's sale. It's the way you can sell someone's house or ranch out from under them. And the creditor is the one that gets to choose the agent. They could have chosen an attorney, they could have chosen anyone the circuit court would have accepted.
So, Mr. Mahoney, are you arguing that Equitable was unreasonable in expecting the sheriff to follow their instructions?
No, but like any other principal and agent, that issue is between the agent and the principal, not the other party. Here, I don't know what allegations or what claims Equitable could make against its own agents for their violations of instructions. Remember, I represent the party that Equitable started a foreclosure that went bad, and it has cost my clients tens and tens of thousands of dollars in extra interest to redeem our property that this court said should have never been sold. Whose fault was that? The fault was Equitable's, not the sheriff's. And it can't be forgiven. It's a simple, simple thing. Equitable had no right to have the sale. Their agents, and it would be an easier case, I think, if their agent was one of their guys. So we can remove all that by simply putting the responsibility, as the restatement would, on Equitable. You started the sale. You have responsibility, wrongfully started the sale. You have responsibility for the sale, and it matters not. If that is the case, then all of these issues on government liability and so forth with the sheriff doesn't make any difference, because it's true with any agent. And maybe they'll pay more attention and call off these sales.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer Henry.
Okay.
Mr. Timpson, you have 8 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, counsel. After reading the appellate's brief, I agreed with Mr. Parsons and the clerk that I would only need 8 minutes. And after hearing Mr. Meyer Henry's argument, I think I might have overstated that. If I understand what he's saying, he has no criticism of the sheriff. I want to be very brief. First of all, there are two issues. One is the tort issue and the negligence of the sheriff, and that has to do with the requirement of SBCL 3-21-2 and the statutory notice. I'll get to that in a minute. And the other was a claim to violation of Section 1983, the constitutional violation. However, that was not briefed by the appellant, nor was it addressed in the reply brief. According to the decision of this court, I'm going to consider that waived and not address it unless the court has questions on it, which I will. Then finally, we hear so much about the agency argument. I doubt that Sheriff Young is an agent any more than if I have a derelict standing in my front yard and I call the police to have him taken away. And they handcuff him too tight, that I'm liable. A law enforcement officer is not the agent of. He's performing a statutory duty. He does not have a choice to say, when there is a foreclosure and an order for sale from the court ordering him to conduct a sale, he can't go say, Judge, I never liked Equitable. I don't want to work for them. I don't like those people. They're all from Denver and North Dakota. He didn't have that choice. He was performing a statutory duty, and he had to go out there and do that. Now, the beauty, of course, of a summary judgment is that there is no factual dispute. The brief of the appellant and his argument today doesn't create or allude to one. The only issue on the statutory notice required by SBCL 3-21 is the interrogatory served by Sheriff Young on the plaintiffs to the effect of, did you ever give or attempt to give any notice? One word, no. They never gave the notice. In their brief, they now try to claim that after this sale, in some place in the course of the proceedings, Sheriff Young commented to somebody, you know, this thing's going to end up in court. Well, no kidding. He's got a lawyer from Rapid City saying, call off the sale. He's got a state's attorney telling him to go ahead with the sale. And he's got a circuit judge staying the proceedings. Obviously, he knew it was going to go to court. If that in any way constitutes some kind of constructive or whatever notice that he himself, as the sheriff, were going to be named as a party and asked to respond in damages, then our statutory notice provision has no meaning whatsoever. Obviously, he knew the matter was going to end up in court. There were lawyers arguing against both sides and involving the judges before the ink was dry on the order for sale. So that explains that comment. But again, the only bit of evidence from the time the complaint was filed in this till today, the second trip for some of us, Sheriff Young was not a party when this litigation was in its first appeal. The only evidence anywhere on the notice issue is, what did you serve any notice or attempt to give any notice to the sheriff? And the plaintiffs under oath said no. End of story there. And as I said, I don't see this as an agency issue that would somehow morph Sheriff Young into some role that would expose him to liability outside of his official capacity. You don't go on the front steps of the Jones County Courthouse in your uniform with a judicial order for sale in anything but your official capacity. He was there, the sheriff of Jones County. He didn't violate anybody's constitutional rights. Nobody ever specified what he did. And that argument, as I said, has not been briefed, nor was it addressed in the reply brief. So I'm deeming it waived unless the court has questions. And the statute, SDCL 3-21, is clear. If you're seeking damages against any governmental employee, which of course includes a county sheriff, you have to give the 180-day notice. There is no issue here of a stop, where as there have been, like in the Brookings County case, where an insurance person paid medical bills and led this person along until day 181 and then said, whoops, no fair. As I said, the issue and the evidence is only what notice, did you give any notice? And the plaintiff said no. Without having given that notice, any argument of waiver or some constructive admission by the sheriff that this is going to end up in court could do nothing but vitiate that statute. Having said that, unless the court has any questions, I think there is every reason that Judge Anderson's summary judgment as to Sheriff Young needs to be affirmed. There is simply no reason, factually or legally, in this record, written or oral, so far before this court, that would support any other conclusion. Your Honors, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Timpson. Mr. Parsons, you have 12 minutes, sir.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, counsel. This court has said many times that the question of duty is a question of law. And the legal question in this case is primarily controlled by the principles enunciated by this court in two decisions. The first was, of course, the prior incarnation of this case, where this court held that Equitable legally canceled the public auction prior to the hammer falling, that the sheriff had a legal duty to follow Equitable's instructions, and that the sheriff violated that duty by resuming the auction and conducting and completing an unauthorized sale. And then in Braun, this court reaffirmed South Dakota's longstanding recognition that of the principle established in the restatement that we've talked about, 452, that where because of a lapse of time or otherwise, the duty to prevent the harm to another threatened by the actor's negligent conduct is found to have shifted from the actor to a third party, then the failure to prevent such harm is a superseding cause. And where that's the case, as this court explained, the entire responsibility, irregardless of any prior negligence, whether there is any or not, shifts to the third person and the original actor is relieved of liability. Now, I would suggest that this case presents a classic example of shifting duty. It's exactly what happened in this case. I'd like to touch on four areas in my time that explain that. And the first is the exercise of independent judgment that courts have talked about. The second is knowledge of the danger. The third is legal foreseeability that this court focused on in Braun. And then the fourth is the claim that the Jones County Sheriff is not a third person, or that Equitable is the sheriff. Now, I have copies for the court of a decision not cited in our brief from the United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit that was recently handed down. Johnson versus Florida. It discusses the issue of independent judgment.
Under our rules, then, you would provide the clerk with seven copies, Shirley? All right.
Yes.
And then copy opposing counsel, too.
I have those, Your Honor. Here in that, the 11th Circuit addressed this issue of independent judgment and superseding cause. And what they said was, a new action or event is only considered to be sufficiently intervening if it is made freely, deliberately, and knowledgeably. Thus, the actions of uninformed agents who unwittingly further the principal's purposes are generally deemed inadequate to break the causal chain. In contrast, the exercise of independent judgment by a later actor may suffice to sever the connection to the original wrongful action. And I would suggest that's exactly what happened here. That's the essence of what happened. The sheriff's office conducted a public auction pursuant to statute and the court's foreclosure order. He was acting in his official capacity. He received his instructions to cancel the sale from Equitable. And then the sheriff exercised his independent judgment to ignore those very clear instructions, and the record's undisputed, he received them in time, he understood those instructions, and he decided, after consulting with the state's attorney, that he was going to disobey those instructions and instead resume the sale that had been legally canceled and complete an unauthorized sale. Now, the exercise of independent judgment is reinforced by something this court focused on in Braun, which was knowledge of the danger. It's clear that, as I said, the sheriff had full knowledge of the danger or the risk that he was assuming. He even, I think, made a joke that this was going to result in a lawsuit. This was not a surprise whatsoever. The night before, I mean, Equitable, this deal was not made. I mean, Equitable was owed $1.3 million, and this sale had been scheduled for weeks. Equitable did not receive funds, and the deal was not signed until the late afternoon before the morning that the sale was scheduled. And so the Olsons then wired the money at sometime close to 5 o'clock p.m. Even so, Equitable had contacted the sheriff's office and said, this deal has been made. We expect the money to be wired, and we're 95% certain that the sale is going to go, going to be canceled. And so the sheriff knew that a deal had been struck. And then in the morning, after the sale was interrupted, he received clear instructions and was told, there's nothing to sell here. This property's been sold. This property's been transferred. You are to cancel the sale and not resume it. He knew that that was the result. He knew that that had happened, and yet he elected, on the advice of his state's attorney, to continue to do that. And so I think the knowledge of the danger element is also satisfied. I want to also touch on legal foreseeability. This court focused on that in Braun, and that also is a question of law. Was Equitable entitled to rely on a public official to perform his legal duty and not violate it? And I would suggest that it would stretch the universe of tort liability really beyond all comprehension to say that Equitable is responsible for the actions or mistakes of a public official in the conduction of a public duty. Now, counsel has referred to this repeatedly as a private sale. This was not a private sale. By any definition, this was a public auction. And the state has enacted these statutes because it has an interest in making sure that these things are conducted above board. And there's nothing funny going on. I haven't seen any authority cited for the fact that Equitable could have hired a real estate agency to foreclose on this property, as has been suggested. Equitable is required to use these foreclosure statutes, and they provide for the sheriff to conduct the sale. When he does that, he's acting under color of law. He's wearing his badge. He's got his gun. He's taking instructions from the state's attorney. He's not retained by Equitable. He's appointed by the court, and I think any suggestion that there's some sort of collapsing of identity between Equitable and the Jones County Sheriff's Office is very unpersuasive. I guess to analogize too, if let's assume the sheriff had gotten into a car accident on the way to the sheriff's sale, there's no way that Equitable would be liable for his negligence. Or if the sheriff's gun accidentally went off during the sale, he's not acting in his capacity as Equitable's agent. Or if he'd written the wrong name on the foreclosure or the wrong amount, that's not something that Equitable would be responsible for. The sheriff is performing his ministerial duties. Now, in the prior incarnation, this court did say that he's acting in the function of an auctioneer, but this court did not say that he is Equitable's agent for all purposes, including tort liability. This court, I believe, was simply analogizing to the fact that he is obligated in his role as a public official to follow Equitable's instructions. He has a duty to do so, and it's that duty imposed by law, as this court has held, that creates the superseding liability when he violates it. Equitable, in this case, did all that it could have done. After Equitable gives its instructions, and it gave its instructions in time to cancel the sale, as this court has held, there's nothing more that it can do. I think in the first summary judgment hearing, Judge Anderson joked, you know, what did you want Equitable to do? Wrestle the sheriff to the ground and take away his gun? I mean, there's nothing it can do after it gives its instructions. At that point, the sheriff then has the legal duty. Equitable has satisfied its duty. The sheriff then has a public duty, a legal duty, to follow those instructions. And it has the only the sheriff has the power to cancel the sale. Equitable has the authority to give instructions, but only the sheriff in a public auction, as this clearly was. Only the sheriff has the power to do so. Equitable has to rely on the sheriff to perform its legal duty. And when the sheriff violates that legal duty, then that is a superseding cause of the damages that result, whether or not Equitable was negligent before that, as this court held in Braun. The original actor's liability, if any, is extinguished, and the superseding independent cause, exercised by independent discretion, with full knowledge of the danger involved, becomes the superseding cause. And so we would respectfully ask that this court affirm Judge Anderson's well-reasoned decision.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Mr. Meyer Henry, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like again to point the court to the restatement and remembering that Equitable is relying on an exception to the general rule. Restatement of Torts 439 says, if the effects of the actor's negligent conduct actively and continuously operate to bring about harm to another, the fact that the active and substantially simultaneous operation of the effects of a third person's innocent, tortious, or criminal act is also a substantial factor in bringing about the harm does not protect the actor from liability.
Now, you've cited the restatement. Mr. Parsons gave us a statutory argument where he said basically the sheriff was under a court order, under statute, to do his auctioneering duties. What is the relationship of the restatement as against those statutes?
Because this is a tort case, and it's based in part of having a wrongful foreclosure sale. I didn't hear them say that the foreclosure sale should have gone forward. What they're trying to do is to tell the court, oh, we made a mistake to allow the situation to occur, and now say after an appeal in this court's ruling that the sheriff was wrong. Remember what the court was just told. Here's the sheriff in Jones County. He gets a call from Equitable because they have a wrongful sale going on. He doesn't know what to do. He consults with the state's attorney. He goes forward. All right, what this restatement says, Judge, is that justice is this, is that if you set about things going on, if there is another wrongful act that occurs simultaneously, because remember, this wrongful act happened during the wrongful foreclosure sale. It's going on. The phone call came in while it was going on. So this restatement says, if it's a third party and you've set about this avalanche, you can't then say stop the avalanche, or if they make a mistake. My point is this, is what this case is about is the wrongful foreclosure. And during the foreclosure, I'm using the word agent, meaning the only reason for this sale and the only way it could go forward is Equitable put it into operation. They put it into operation.
Mr. Meyer-Henner, I'm still unclear. I think I'm confused like Mr. Timpson. Are you now abandoning your claim against the sheriff?
We're not abandoning it because it's in the alternative. If this court were to rule that the wrongful foreclosure sale was caused by Equitable and occurrences that happened within it are the responsibility of Equitable, I don't see where the Olsons have a claim against the sheriff. What Equitable wants to do is say the sheriff is some kind of public official that we can dump this in their lap, and even if we started a wrongful foreclosure sale.
Yeah, but do you have a claim against the sheriff? Are you still making your claim against the sheriff?
We
understand you correctly, you're saying it's in the alternative.
Well, we do. We have some struggles there, as pointed out. We have the notice requirement. I can't quarrel with Mr. Timpson's answer to that. We do. But our view of this case is that it was Equitable who caused it to happen.
Okay.
And if, while it's going on, for Equitable to say, we're an innocent party, is not correct. Because their exception to the restatement, if you read it, this is not a superseding cause. This happened during the foreclosure sale. It was perhaps, as was determined months later by this court, an incorrect decision. But it happened during the foreclosure sale that the sheriff, frankly, had nothing to do with.
Now, you're arguing about Section 439. You're saying that it continuously acts. I think possibly 439 doesn't apply because Equitable actually stopped the sale. They came and said, stop the sale, and then the sheriff chose to continue it. Doesn't that throw 439 out of consideration?
No, it doesn't, because it says, even if it's innocent, tortious, or criminal, the question, as the facts show below, the question for the state's attorney at Jones County was, can I stop it? And evidently the answer was no. They went forward. So my point is, that may have been wrong, Judge. But that's where it says, even if it's innocent, tortious, or criminal, because there's another restatement that says once you start things in process, you're still responsible for those. If that was wrong, as was decided long months later, it's still Equitable's foreclosure sale. It's not the sheriff's. It's Equitable's. And if things go wrong, these are big boys and girls, these creditors. They chose not to have a lawyer there. They chose not to cancel the sale. I mean, didn't choose, but they didn't. So the sheriff's role should not be brought to any great extent like Equitable would claim today, that somehow here is the magnificent sheriff and that he was under total control. He was only there at the behest and the requirement of Equitable's foreclosure sale.
But going back to your agency argument,
yes,
at the risk of displaying my ignorance now, would Equitable have had a choice to hire someone else besides the sheriff to do the foreclosure?
Yes. If you read, and I don't have it in front of me, I apologize, but I know it says the sheriff's the primary person, but that statute where you go to appoint, this is just for sale, remember, not the whole foreclosure. For the foreclosure sale, it says the sheriff or other responsible person. So some other person can do it. Is it normal, routine? No, it's not.
Kind of like a process server now?
Yes. I mean, it's similar. If you go read the, and I don't have them here to quote accurately, but I have read this in preparation, and you can appoint someone else. You could appoint, just like we do, very few subpoenas are served by the sheriff's office anymore in Minnehaha County and surrounding area. It's all process server because it has that word sheriff or other purpose. Sure, the sheriff has a duty to do this. I'm not quarreling with that. What I'm trying to do is separate these other lawful operations of the sheriff's office from this foreclosure sale situation. And my point is that Equitable chose the person to conduct the sale and then tries to escape liability by saying this sheriff intervened in a wrongful sale. No, what the sheriff did, according to them, is made a wrong call, as did the state's attorney, as did Circuit Court Judge Gorbs. They made a decision. It turned out to be the wrong decision. But that's Equitable's decision, is my point. And maybe I'm confusing the court with my term of agency, but what I'm saying is it was Equitable's power and control, as this court has said, as an auctioneer or whatever, to do that. And so that is the purpose of tort law, is to put back, as this court said, put everybody back where they should be. Well, who should stand this loss? Should the Olsons pay $250,000 in extra interest because Equitable, through its attorney, didn't call off the sale and it went bad? Should it be the sheriff who probably got $65 for his legal duties, according to Equitable? Or should it be Equitable? This wouldn't have happened had they not been negligent in not calling off the sale. And because during the sale, difficult questions. I mean, look, we had an opportunity to write briefs for this court. You have an opportunity to study those briefs and make a reasoned decision. This is a sheriff who's called back from his elk hunting trip in Colorado by Equitable to have a sale. And he starts
before your time expires. Under the 1983 claim, what is the federal the constitutional right or federal statute that the sheriff violated?
I'm going to ask you not to answer that because this is rebuttal. They didn't get to argue it. I don't think that's fair.
So I'm back to, did the circuit judge make the correct decision.
Mr. Myrie, just very, very quickly here. Is the negligence that they did not have an attorney there from the company, is that the negligence?
That's negligent, absolutely. When that money was wired, I mean, everybody knew this. This is $1.3 million, folks. I'm sorry, $1.3 million.
In South Dakota, that's still real money.
That's still real money. They got the money. Everybody knew. Brent Wilbur, all the lawyers were talking. What happened is the Rapid City lawyer, for whatever reason, didn't call off the sale. It was negligent not to call off the sale. We haven't gotten to trial, but I presume most foreclosure lawyers would say, if you have a $1,300,000 foreclosure, it is negligent not to be personally present. But we haven't gotten there yet. Their act and what they're responsible for is the negligence of allowing the sale to begin. And under all the tort law, other than superseding cause exception, they are responsible if that blows up and goes bad. Because they started this in process. But for their negligence of allowing this to go forward, the sheriff wouldn't have been put in the impossible position of making a last-minute call. Thank you very much. I hope I urge you to reverse the summary judgment, especially against Equitable.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer-Henry. We'll be in recess for approximately 10 minutes.